Music, music, music. Oh, I guess it's your music.
Right.
I can't do it again.
Okay, so this is our second attempt at a Lookout Learning podcast. We're going to try something different this time. Next time will probably be different as well.
Yeah, it'd be super if we had a good third person on this one.
We'll figure it out with some trial and error, but this time we're just going with the two of us. I'm Matthew.
One's Jeff. Hey. We wouldn't be this weird to start, but we are trying to figure out how to run the best podcast introduction. Everybody does these podcast intro songs. Every podcast you listen to is going to have some intro song. Seems like there might be some problems with that. And being ever defensive, we want to make sure we're not rubbing anybody the wrong way.
Right. It's thinking about this, it seemed weird to me that it's odd that I felt the compulsion to have some sort of intro song or theme. And then I kind of thought about it like a TV show. They all have opening themes. I don't know. I guess it's just some sort of natural.
It makes sense. I mean, intro song, introduction is just how people have been conditioned. But then, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of TV shows that just start and then they have their intro 5 minutes in, like House.
Yeah, because I was waiting for you to pause so I could say, you know what we should do? We should have cold openings for our podcast where we start out the podcast and then we have some sort of misdirection and then the theme song.
Yeah, my other example is going to be Greek. I don't think you would have called into that one.
If you'd have no, Greek,
I'd do the same thing. All right, one of us needs a medical disaster.
Well, we'll just like fake a new guest every time. That'll be our third person every time we'll be on for the first 2 minutes of the podcast.
Is Felix Hernandez dead? Interesting.
Anything for ratings.
Yeah, it just feels kind of naked not having one.
Right. I guess the other issue, and this will kind of go out for feedback if anybody has some clarification on this, is any legal issues that pertain to this, because obviously we're not going to license the rights to any songs, but I don't know how it works since we're not actually really selling the podcast for money.
Yeah.
I don't know if it qualifies under fair use, or maybe we'll just have to create a theme song.
I don't know if you guys remember, but Matthew used to have the beer of the series. You know, every series preview is sponsored by a beer. Then we were talking to Derek Zumsteg, U.S. Mariner, and he was talking about how he had to take down his big beer post because of potential legal ramifications. What if somebody went out, got wasted on his advice, and got in an accident? Then are they liable? So same kind of legal fears. Let's try not to get sued. Maybe we should establish ourselves first.
Right. We want to kind of go to all of our any donation drives we'd like to spend on food and housing and not legal fees. That would be a bummer.
Any lawyers out there? Because that would be a big help.
That being said, I think we should really use the Scruff McGruff as our theme song. just to turn off any viewers or listeners right away.
I'm for it.
I'm trying to get Matt Pittman to get rid of that ad because it's the most annoying thing in the history of the universe.
You know, there's a very limited number of things I remember from my childhood. I had no idea that Scruff McGruff was still going strong. For the 15 years or so where I didn't hear that song, I still remembered it. Every single number, letter, I don't know why, but it hit the perfect...
Yeah.
Perfect tune, just stick in my memory, and I think it's in there. Geometry's not in there. What I had for dinner last week isn't in there, but Scruff McGruff. I know where to mail that letter.
It's not even just that Scruff McGruff is still going strong. It's the same commercial. It's the same script.
The song's a little different. The singer's a little different. It used
right,
to be the dog.
The jingle is different, like the tone, but I mean, as far as the lyrics, it's still
perfect.
Like what to do with about bullies after school. And it's like, really? You might want to update this for 2010. Kids have other concerns.
I don't actually remember what is he, like drug resistance? Crime dog.
Yeah, he's crime dog. Yeah.
He's crime dog. All right, that's cool.
Should be like, what to do when your girlfriend sends you naked pictures over a text message. No, yeah. That's what kids probably need to know now.
I'm going
to
call a dog. I can't believe Scruff McGruff outlasted Fred McGriff in popularity.
Oh, that's true.
Maybe we should use this time to talk about baseball a little bit. We can get back to Scruff McGruff.
Yeah.
So obviously, There is the big story today was the Benchies signing to Oakland. It happened early this morning. I think there were rumors lately that he was going to, you know, the Rangers were in there, the Mariners were in there, the Mets, the Cubs were in there, and then Oakland just kind of comes out of nowhere and makes this competitive offer, aggressive offer, really. You know, rumors broke is going to be about $8 million. That turned out to be $10 million in incentives. And it's one of those deals, I don't know, you look at it and you think, Benchies, section name. Mariners could use him. Mariners couldn't really afford him, so it's weird to be in a reality where the A's could. And get a good deal out of it, I think.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel on the deal, and I actually just... Well, I didn't just write it, but it just got published on Fangraphs. I wrote about it. The whole deal leaves me feeling, I guess, nonplussed, actually, to use the correct definition of it. Because I think the A's are overpaying him. $10 million guaranteed. Plus what turns out to be up to $2 million in incentives based on innings pitched.
I was going
to
ask you about that. I wasn't sure what they were.
Yeah, I looked that up. It's $500,000 each for 165, 175, 185, and 195 innings.
All right, so if he's healthy, he gets paid.
Right. But even the $10 million guaranteed, since it's a one-year deal, I'm comfortable with using this winter's depressed economic market of about $3.5 million per win, which means the A's are paying him to be a three-win player, guaranteed. And looking at it, Ben Sheets last pitched a quasi-full season in 2008. He got about 200 innings, and he was a 4.5-win pitcher. You factor in, it's 2 years later, he just had elbow injuries, so you expect some injury-related decline and some just natural regression. He's 31 now. If he pitched another 200 innings, I would project him for 4 wins. But that's in the NL. He's always been in the NL, so he's going to the AL, so knock down another half win. And I think he's about a 3.5-win player if he threw 200 innings, which is, you can't project that. Shown, fans, everybody seems to say, 120, 130 or so innings. That puts him at about 2.25 wins. So, and it's one of the things that I brought up as well. If he's pitching at the level where he's a 3.5-win player, like I said, that's over 200 innings, which means he triggers that extra $2 million in incentives. So now you're paying $12 million for 3.5 wins, which is still an overpay. So strictly in a vacuum, I don't like the deal for the A's, or I don't love the deal for the A's, but, and this is what Graham was trying to get through in the thread that a lot of people seem to be missing, this is kind of a no-lose move by Oakland, because Sheets is one of the few impact possible players left on the market.
Right.
They were clearly the fourth best team in the West. They were clearly that by 5 or 6 wins. Ben Sheets does give them, 4 or 5 win upside. If he hits, if they roll 777s with Ben Sheets, they're in it with everybody.
So if you go back to your division projections, I think you had the A's at something like 78 wins. I think this is before Kuzminov, and obviously you can't nail them down to a single win total. But if you figure Sheets, even if you get him to throw, 120, 130 innings this year, you're looking at the kind of improvement where the A's are suddenly at least a 500 team on true talent, and that gives this division 4 teams that, based on our estimations, look to be somewhere between 80, 88 wins. I don't know. The spread in this division to win it might be something like 20% to 30% odds. It is just so close. It's not the best division in baseball. The AL East is always going to be phenomenal. But this is going to be a hell of a race. We're all thrilled with what the Mariners have done, but they're not in a terrific position. We're not the favorites.
No. Pinheiro signing with Anaheim really put them up above us, I felt. More so just because of who he replaced in the rotation. And with Kuzminov and now Sheets in, I have Oakland at 82.25 wins.
Okay.
And then Texas at 85.5, Seattle 86.5, and Anaheim at 88.25. So, you're talking a spread of 6 wins between first and worst.
This is something that maybe we're talking about Ben Sheets. Ben Sheets is one of the best sounding pitcher names in baseball. And everybody remembers him for racking up a ton of strikeouts, walking nobody. This is a streak of his in a strikeout to walk ratio. He went 8.3, 5.6, and then unbelievably 10.6. Strikeout to walk ratio in 2006, he had more than 10 strikeouts for every walk. But then you look at the next 2 years. I don't know if his strikeouts dropped off a lot. He started walking a little more. And if you look at it in 07, 08, he was a good pitcher. He was not an ace in the National League, and this is with Milwaukee, and this is over 55 starts. So Ben Sheets, maybe we are getting a little caught up in his name. He's a very good pitcher. We know how much talent he has, but he hasn't really been Ben Sheets for about 4 years.
Right, and in between that, he's had, obviously, this elbow surgery, an upper back problem, 2 shoulder problems. He has a lot of docs on his arm and on his pitching mechanics, so... Yeah, and it's one of those things where we have to, especially I run into this a lot trying to come up with this AOS spreadsheet. I'm trying to balance my own bias about Mariner projections against tempering this sort of prevalence for doom bias, I'll call it, when other teams sign a guy. When Oakland signs Ben Sheets, everybody flips out that, they just signed a 4-win pitcher. No, they really probably didn't. They probably signed a 2.5-win pitcher who's taking the place of a 1-win pitcher. But on the other hand, am I being too pessimistic? And it just leaves me in this weird place. But yeah, I think it's one of those things where Ben Sheets did have the track record before. Everybody knew his name. Mm-hmm. And he was the only such pitcher left on the market.
Yeah.
And fifth starter is such a huge hole for us that it's just one of those things where people, kind of like with Jason Schmidt 3 years ago.
Yeah, whenever it was.
Matt Tizaka 3 years ago, Rich Harden 2 months ago, where people just thought, okay, we don't want to get too excited, but this is such a good and obvious fit that you just kind of can't help start anchoring your brain towards that, and then when it doesn't happen.
I know, I was as guilty of that as anyone with Rich Harden. I didn't think there were any alternatives either. There's one of the injured ones. There's Harden, Bedard, Sheath, Randy Johnson, or somebody. Certainly never saw Cliff Lee coming. But it is really easy to get attached to that kind of name. And what you have to remember is the A's obviously spent more than anybody was comfortable spending. But if you look at the offers they've made to Beltre, and they had some money in there for Chapman, I think, the A's clearly had some money to move around that they hadn't moved around yet. And while it's kind of a weird position to be in, teams generally don't carry over budget. So it would make sense kind of for the A's, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong, but if they had that money to move, Ben Sheets is probably the most talented player left on the market. I guess it makes sense to just throw the Beltre money at him.
Right. See, that's the thing. That's where I'm trying to say, and I think what Graham was trying to say as well, is that just vacuum in a straight dollars per war sense, it's probably an overpay, but in terms of the context, which is important, I can't come up with anything but that this is a good move for Oakland. So I guess what's left is what's out there now for the Mariners. So
right.
We saw Pinheiro go. We saw Sheets go. I will say one thing, comparing the two, boy, would I rather have Rich Harden at $6.5 million and the option than Ben Sheets.
Absolutely.
At $10 million. That's one of those deals for Texas that looks better and better as the offseason goes along. I know we kind of got steered off that because the Lee trade happened right after. I still really love Rich Harden on this rotation.
Yeah, it's interesting to think that we feasibly could have done both.
Yeah.
Because we're still looking for that starter. And you don't want to get too greedy. We got Cliff Lee. We got Sean Figgins, Bradley. We got everybody. You just, with a general manager like Zrencic, you're always thinking, I want every move to be magic. I want more. I want you to find a perfect fifth starter now. So if you look at what we have, what we're looking at, in-house, we need to improve on it. And so it becomes a question of, do we trade? Do we try to sign a free agent? Or do we make do with what we have now and wait?
There's obviously a lot of options. You talked about one today. Nick Hill, who, by the way, I saw your email that you were posting about that. I thought it was about Rich Hill.
Yeah, sort of Google.
Right.
Every time I would look up Nick Hill curveball, and every time it would be like, are you sure you didn't mean Rich Hill curveball? And I was like, yeah, I'm pretty sure because Nick Hill still pitches.
Rich Hill actually just signed today as well.
Are you serious?
Yeah. He signed a minor league deal with the Cardinals, which came across my Twitter about 20 minutes before your email that you were posting on Hill. So I was like, oh, okay, that's – Jeff's got some awesome scouting thing on Rich Hill.
I don't know. I think I'd rather have Preston Vansill.
We'll get to him in a second. But so aside from Nick Hill, Jason Vargas, Luke French, Garrett Olson on the left-hand side, Doug Fister and Yusmiro?
Just YP. YP, perfect.
YP?
Now I want to keep him.
See, you're not supposed to put a name to the face. Now I'm kind of attached.
I'm thinking of a little orange fuzzball. Okay, I'm YP. I'm going to have a little campaign going. Save YP on the Mariners.
This is going to take off. We already got his nickname, too. We can't. No, he's
we got Jeff Baker's support. That's for damn sure.
Oh, God. Okay, can we?
No. Moving on. All right.
So, I don't want to.
I'll ask you. Right now, where the Mariners are, how do you add to the rotation, or do you?
It's a tough thing. I don't think it's all doom now that Ben Sheets is gone. I think there are some upside players still left out on the market. John Smoltz, for one. Eric Bedard, I know he won't be ready start of the season, but come July, he probably will be ready, and Ben Sheets will probably be hurt. So, you don't quite have the guarantee that he's going to start the season healthy that you, I guess, conceivably have with Ben Sheets, but he still has upside. Ching-Ming Wong maybe has upside.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what Arizona's plans with Brandon Webb are. I know they picked up his option, but
I don't think he was too thrilled about that, if memory serves.
Right. I don't know. Mainly, I mean, I don't know how their team stacks up this year. I haven't looked at the NL West, so I don't know if it's a case where they're just they have him for cheap, so they're going to keep him, or if they're not in a situation where they're going to compete in that division, maybe that's something we could pry away from them.
Well, if you believe in the Zips projections, I think the Dodgers are forecasted to win about 140 games. So I don't know if the Diamondbacks are going to be able to keep up.
Right. And the Giants are, well, the Giants are there.
Yeah, we can avoid the Giants topic. I know what that does to you.
It's fine. I'm over it now. I'm over it.
Yeah, okay. So, bottom line.
Hey, you know who else is a free agent?
What's that?
Chasung Beck.
Well, I guess we could use a righty Vargas. I'm pretty sure he is just Yuppie. It's the same kind of guy.
Possibly more entertaining facial expressions.
Yeah, it's entertaining. Just this generation is just entertaining is not entertaining. That's these people in their deadpan. It's like, let's go back to slapstick. Let's see what that's like.
I don't know. It's tough to say what Jack Sorensen could trade for. I'm not as up to date on what every team is out there. We could, I guess, go after a Koji Uehara or something to that effect. But I hate talking about trades because just for the general reason of it takes two teams. Yeah. You have no idea what the other team values. There's way too many variables involved.
Well, that's why we should pile onto the whole Liriano rumor, because that's Dave's rumor. So he's responsible for it. So sorry, Dave, but if we're going to talk about any trade rumor, that's going to be that one. And it's your ass.
You know, I didn't like that rumor when it first started. Just my initial reaction was I thought Liriano was not enough for Jose Lopez. But I've really warmed to the idea since then. But it does seem like if it's going to happen, it's going to happen soon, because Orlando Hudson seems on the verge of signing with either the Nationals or some other team. I heard today the Rays are involved, and that's one of those things. Hey, if the Rays are involved, then it's probably a smart move to go after him. So
you got Orlando Hudson sitting in his living room thinking, Tampa Bay? Or the Nationals. And then, I mean, I say that as a joke, but then I just thought about it. Which one is actually more fucked? Where do I not want to go to the playoffs?
Well, Tampa Bay could still get in there.
I guess. I don't know. I'm kind of off the Rays wagon. It got popular enough. I'm on to, I haven't decided who I'm on yet. I'll pick somebody then. I'll tell
Pirates.
Somebody in May.
It's Pittsburgh's year, baby. No,
the Pirates have Jeff Clement. And he's just a pile of shit. I don't think I can root for a team with him again.
They have Jackie Bostrich.
That's true.
And the other half of our farm system that the Royals don't have.
I have absolutely nothing on the Pirates. I don't think they're going to be my team. I haven't decided.
No, that's fine. I hate Pittsburgh anyway, so.
Baltimore would be fun.
No.
I want Chris Tillman back. I had never made fun of him enough when we had him.
I'm so tired of hearing about Baltimore.
So the rotation, like, we can go back. We don't have to go off on this tangent. But
I guess the question is between Nick Hill, Vargas, French, UP, Olsen, Fister. So that's six guys. Now, we have four penciled into the rotation. We have four penciled into the bullpen. I'm going to go ahead and assume that Sean White is just not a factor for this year.
Right. Or they'll try him in spring training. I doubt he's going to make the roster. This is secondhand information, but I don't think we're going to see a lot of Sean White.
Yeah, so is his back, his arm?
It's his shoulder, I think.
Oh,
I think his shoulder is just, it's ground beef.
Maybe we can trade him to the Mets. We have eight slots locked up. I'd love it to only be 11 total, but realistically it's going to be 12. And I don't think anybody that we haven't mentioned out of those fifth starter options is really a candidate for the bullpen.
I could see Olsen making it as the lefty. I know they don't like having a lefty situational guy, but Olsen could pick up a lot of innings. You know, he could serve the Batista role of come in when nobody's watching anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the option situation. Also, I know if Petit doesn't meet the roster out of camp, I'm pretty sure he's gone. If somebody claims him,
right. But what I meant was, I don't think there's anybody that we left off that list that has a potential to break camp as a reliever, but not a starter. Right? Not like like Eric Hole is not going to beat out any of those six guys. So out of those six, we're looking at three, maybe four, making the team as the back end of the bullpen and the fifth starter.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, there's nobody left-handed in the bullpen. So obviously, my gut says I think Vargas has the track on the fifth starter slot.
Yeah, I agree with that one. I don't actually know why. I don't remember any particular information steering me that way. It feels right, you know? Like French scuffled when he came over. What the less said about Olsen, the better. Nobody really knows that much about Petit. He's new. Righty, he's not as good a fit for the park. Fister, I think it is going to come down to Fister versus Vargas. And then I think Hill is going to have a chance. If we don't sign somebody or get somebody and we go with Vargas or Fister, I think Hill stands a real chance of coming up before too long in the season, assuming neither Vargas nor Fister are impressing. And Hill is putting up a shiny ERA in Tacoma.
Right. My feeling is, I think I'm drawn to Vargas just because he at least does something. Well, there's something I can point to that's like, you know, his changeup is awesome. It's fun watching his changeup. Garrett Olsen is Luke French, is Jared Washburn, is, you know, they're just carbon copies of each other with varying degrees of toner and ink. But there's no one thing that they do impressively.
Right.
So my feeling is that Vargas makes the fifth spot. I think in that case, Hill makes the bullpen.
Well, remember, Hill is not on the 40-man roster.
That's true, but they have space on the 40-man, do they not?
I think they're out of space, but they do have Gabby Hernandez, which means they have space.
Right. There's always somebody. Right. I guess that does make sense. They might not go with Hill because the marginal upgrade from like Luke French to Nick Hill is meaningless, or Garrett Olson to Nick Hill.
Mm-hmm.
I think Fischer ends up back in Tacoma starting, which is where mm-hmm. I would like to see him. And I guess maybe they carry UP at the back end of the bullpen to avoid losing him.
Mm-hmm.
Hill goes back to Tacoma. And then,
I think that's weird. What you suggest we do with UP, I think, is exactly what we did with Shaw Beck before setting him free about a month into the season.
Right. That was a fantastic trade.
Yeah.
Because then all he did was pitch as an average starter for the Padres.
As an average boring starter, which seems to be what, that's the thing. They're going for brothers and really, really boring, decent starters.
Yeah. John Garland, woo. He's not decent, though. He's boring, but he's not decent.
200 innings.
Yeah. Well, I guess we did get Jared Wells out of the Cha Sung Beck trade, which got us the one hilarious joke. But
here's your shout out, Robert.
Yeah, there you go.
Take it to the bank.
So we have no idea really what the Mariners are going to do with that fifth starter option, but the Mariners did make a move recently, going mm-hmm. back to Preston Vansell.
Yeah, we gave this guy some Google hits. Now a couple people know who he is, and I feel bad belittling. Making fun of this because Preston Vansell can Google is just as well as anybody else, but it's weird to think of how things have changed. When I searched Google News for Mariners yesterday, I just did it and I set it to the last day, and up came this little headline that says Mariners signed some guy, and I was like, who is this some guy? So I Googled him, and the first link was his Facebook account, which I guess is public because I could read his wall, I could look at his pictures, I could read all his little wall posts like, oh, I'm working out today. Right. Crossing my fingers. Oh, I'm a Mariner now, and everybody's congratulating him. And it's so different. It doesn't change the perspective, because I don't think there was a perspective before. But I mean, you remember when we drafted Chris Tillman, there was all that feedback that he was kind of seemed like an idiot. He was wearing an Angels hat on his MySpace page, and people were like, oh, Chris Tillman's an immature douchebag. And I guess it turns out we were right. Then looking at Preston Vansell's page, all of a sudden, I couldn't write the post I wanted to write yesterday, which is like, oh, the Mariners signed some dumbass nobody. You know, who the fuck cares about this guy? I didn't write anything in that vein because, like, oh, wait, now I know who Preston Vansell is as a person. And if he Googles himself, it's not going to take him long to find this page. So I better say something nice.
Diplomatic.
Yeah.
I really did hope, by the way, that the Google News link was Mariners signed some guy. Or maybe that could be your link, or that could be your article title.
Yeah, that was essentially my original headline. I throw that name in there. It's the big search engine optimization for, I'm going to collect all those Preston Vansell search queries.
Yes. We're going to corner that market.
In case that manager ever searches, whatever happened to the guy who threw 149 pitch no hitter? Was it him or Bud Smith? I don't remember which was on my team.
So I will throw in, you actually covered all this internet information scouting work that I could do in your post on Vansell. Which consisted of, yes, a Google search, a Wikipedia search, and his team bio page. But I will say the picture that you link to, the pitch he's actually throwing is a circle change.
Is it?
It is.
I want to go ahead and pull that up right now.
So he does at least throw that.
All right. And I'm guessing on the scouting scale, it's probably between a 20 and an 80. So, I mean, we can make some assumptions, you know, without trying to reveal too much information. When we were at the event with the front office a couple of weeks ago, Jack was talking about how sometimes if you have a scout who has a track record of finding some good guys, some good talent, then Jack will just throw him a bone. And if the scout sees a guy and he's like, hey, I like this player. I like what he has. And if Jack trusts that scout, he will probably sign the player to a contract. So I think this is probably what that is. The Mariners have gone back to this well before that Indy League, that same team, but that was with a different front office. So I don't think this is related to the Jack Ubauskas pickup.
No, probably not, but they have been,
a scout.
I was just, it's a different front office, but it's probably the same scout.
I don't know. I don't have a list of all the turnover, but there's been a lot from the ground up.
Yeah, I guess it wouldn't surprise me either way, but it's one of those things where I bet scouts who are entrenched in probably the Kentucky, Tennessee sort of, probably a college / the independent league / I'm sure there's like some short season A ball there. As well, Appalachian League. I imagine that's probably not somebody, you know, it's almost too low on their radar.
Yeah.
that they'll just tend to retain him. I guess it would go either way. No, if it was a brand new guy, it wouldn't surprise me. If it was the old guy, it wouldn't surprise me. So,
right. Basically, what it comes down to is Preston did something that somebody thought was pretty cool, and somebody told somebody in the front office, actually, come to think of it, I doubt Jack was even involved in this. You know, it's probably, you know.
Well, he threw that new hitter. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, he threw that no hitter, and he only needed roughly twice as many pitches as Andy Ashby once needed in a one hitter in Colorado. So there's your fun fact for Tuesday. I don't know. Obviously, we know nothing about this guy. His stats aren't very good, but whatever. It's news. We're the only people to be talking about it, so let's make a big deal out of it.
Yeah,
Preston Vansell, everybody. We scooped it. We scooped the world.
That's true. There's not a lot going on right now.
What if you'd like to blog for us?
So, yeah, that's about it as far as Mariner news that I can think of.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything new on the rotation front. I mean, this is the Mariner front office. If they're not in trade negotiations with somebody where you would hear some stuff leaked from the other side, if it's free agency stuff, we're just not going to know about it until it happens, if it happens. So I still think we're going to make, we're going to pick up another hitter. I still think we're going to add a starter, but I don't know. I would like it to be Bedard. There's no reason to believe it will be, and I'm not here to speculate on trades.
I've been kind of lost on that whole the fifth starter front ever since Randy up and retired, because that was kind of my Rich Harden thing. It just felt like such a perfect fit.
Oh, you know what? No, there was something I forgot that did come out today. The Mariners are going to be one of approximately 37 teams watching a Noah Lowry workout.
Oh, right.
I think it's going to be 3 major league teams and 34 scouts for the Winnipeg Gold Eyes. Noah Lowry. As I think everybody should be familiar with Noah Lowry. Is he a local guy? He feels like he's probably a local guy.
Keep talking, I'll look it up.
Yeah. People have been talking about Noah Lowry as this left-handed potential young pitcher trade acquisition for years. I don't know if people realize Noah Lowry has been in the major league since 2003. That's how far back he goes. People, for some reason, love the idea of Noah Lowry. He put up shiny ERAs. He's one of those young guys in the Giants rotation. All right, listen up, everybody. Noah Lowry sucks. He was pretty good in 2005, but since then, he's been terrible. And in 2007, he made 26 starts and walked as many people as he struck out. Noah Lowry sucks. He's going to be 30 years old in October. He's not a kid. He's injury-prone. He sucks. His fastball, last time he was healthy, was 87 miles per hour. Noah Lowry's terrible. He's not a... Somebody on Look at Landing today said they wanted Noah Lowry as a potential high upside acquisition. I don't mean to pick on whatever reader that was, but Noah Lowry is high upside, like a metaphor. It's funny. I'm really good on the fly. Noah Lowry's terrible. Mariners have no reason to be interested. Nobody has any reason to be interested. He is not somebody you want in the organization. And you know what? I'm just going to go ahead and spread this rumor. He's probably a dick too. So let's just go ahead and assume there's no upside to Noah Lowry at all, and let's be done with it. That rant is over. Let's move on.
The only high upside that Noah Lowry has is maybe bringing some Tim Lincecum's stash.
That's true. Or Matt Cain's, whatever it is that keeps fly balls in the park.
Yeah. No, and by the way, Noah Lowry is from Ventura, California. I have no idea where that is.
But... Oh, so he's a local kid for me. That's great. I hope he goes to the Angels.
Yeah, and went to Pepperdine. So, yeah, he's never really left the state of California.
Well, I hope he doesn't. Except he could have Winnipeg.
Yeah, screw those people.
All right, this is changing veins, and I wanted to ask you something. Okay. I think we both have an answer to this. It's the ninth inning. You're at Safeco, and the Mariners are losing horribly. The other guy's throwing a no-hitter. What do you root for? Do you root for the no-no, or do you break it up?
Yeah, it's come up a couple of times when I'm out with games and just kind of BSing with people. I am unflinchingly had the same answer no matter what. I root for the Mariners to break it up. Now, the thought occurred to me today as kind of playing a devil's advocate of how does that compare with me rooting for Strasburg all throughout 2008, where I was just, and I held no bones about this, I was rooting for the team to lose.
Mm-hmm.
I think what it comes down to is I root for the best interests of the team mm-hmm. in every situation. In 2008, I was convinced fairly early on in the season that the best interest of the team was to get as high of a draft pick as was possible and mm-hmm. to be as bad as they were in order to not only facilitate that goal, but to hopefully indicate that change needed to happen in the front office.
I'm going to interrupt you real quick just to say, when was it that, when was that PitchFX summit we went to in San Francisco? What month?
That was May. That was about the second or third week in May.
So second or third week of May, and while we were in San Francisco looking at your laptop, we scrolled to look at landing, and Graham put up a post about Steven Strasburg. Mm-hmm. Second or third week of May, we were already looking at the number one pick. That's how bad that team was.
Yeah.
We were 500. We were 13-14 at one point, because that was the name of that picture recap that I did with the knife.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, man, things dropped off. Anyway, please continue.
Yes. Strasburg. Okay. No, yeah, I had to regain my train of thought. Even if I'm rooting for the team to lose that particular game, I never want the team to be a joke.
Mm-hmm.
I never want the team to be embarrassed. I never want... And part of it, I guess, is just that I don't have any kind of mystique about seeing a no-hitter in person. I can understand where people are going or are coming from when they say, you know, I just want to see a no-hitter in person. I don't really care who throws it.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. I just don't agree with it.
Yeah. I actually, of course, had a similar answer where, you know, we root for Strasburg because if you get him, you get to root for Strasburg for 6 years. If you root for a no-hitter, great. You just saw your team get embarrassed, presumably at home. And
probably by a really shitty pitcher, too.
Probably by, Brad Bergeson or somebody.
God. You know,
I was there for that game. You were probably there for a lot of those games.
I was, but...
I live in San Diego. It was a handful of years ago. The Padres got no hit twice in the same season. And, you know, it's kind of a historical anomaly. It's not that big of a deal. They were bad, but whatever. But people still go back to that. They're like, oh, you root for the Padres? The team that got no hit twice in a year? I don't want, like you said, I don't want the team to be a joke. I think all the stuff coming out about, you know, defense independent theory is kind of taking some of the shine off the no-hitter a little bit, as cool as it would be to see. And from my perspective, first of all, there's a big difference between a no-hitter and a perfect game, but it really depends on who the other team is and who the other pitcher is. If they're like Jared Weaver, I'm rooting for the Mariners to hit a single off of his forehead with one out to go. But if it's like, who's a really cool guy? Who do I root for that's on another team?
You don't want to ask me that question, Jeff.
That's true. I'll pull it. He hasn't done anything to piss me off yet. So Neftali Feliz. Okay, maybe I could root for a no-hitter because he's awesome.
God, I hate that guy. I
hope it's on a Jose Lopez pop-out. All right, so this is a very limited... If it were Jamie Burke, I could root for a Jamie Burke no-hitter.
Well, that would be a story on a whole other level. The opposing team would play a pretty big part in that. But I guess, it's one of those things also that, being as rooted in baseball analysis as I am, it kind of sucks some of the joy out of certain things that other people get joy out of, like no-hitters.
Yeah.
Of this type, that 3-strikeout, 2-walk no-hitter is just like, okay, congratulations, defense. Played well today. I mean, I was at a game where, aside from a Nick Markakis kind of /pop-up/fly ball, Jared Washburn threw a perfect game. I wasn't impressed the entire time. It took me till the 8th inning to realize that I was that close to a perfect game.
Mm-hmm. I think those are my favorite. When you hear about, a pitcher goes back to the dugout and it's in the 7th inning, people realize what's going on. Like, what does that tell you about how the pitcher's going?
Right.
It's like, okay, it's comfortable, but I'm not impressed. It's just an average game. Oh, wait, look at that. He's allowed 0 hits. He must be doing great. I try not to diminish it. I do know how much they mean to people. And I mean, I was there when Felix threw that one hitter. I was pissed. I'm still pissed off at J.A. Drew. So no hitters, they kind of bring out the little kid in you. I don't know. Maybe it's more that I don't want other people to feel that at my team's expense.
Exactly. And I'll bring this up because actually the thought of this, I don't know off the top of my head. I'm sure they have. But have the Mariners ever been no hit?
Well, I remember they had a couple embarrassing games against Doug Wechter, and while they weren't no-hit, they might as well have been.
Well, I mean, what comes to mind is I know they've had their share of been dominated by Roger Clemens, the 20-strikeout game, which thankfully was then matched, so we weren't the punchline on that joke anymore.
Yeah.
And also the ALCS one-hitter.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing's come to mind about them being no-hit. I guess I'll leave that out.
They haven't been no-hit in my lifetime, or at least in my fanhood time.
Right. I'll leave that to the readers because I don't feel like looking it up. So
somebody
can respond with whether or not I'm correct or not, or if they one of the early 80s teams got no hit.
Get back to us, MSB.
Yeah.
I know you can find this. I know you can find it in about 10 minutes.
So speaking about being at games, and just kind of a general topic, do you have a routine for going to games? Do you prefer – I know like we went – I've been to one game at Petco with you, and you mentioned mm-hmm. that you like sitting in those lower – left field bleacher seats.
Yeah.
So, I guess they aren't bleacher seats there, but the lower left field seats. You've been to enough games at Safeco now.
Yeah.
And obviously, setting aside the really kick-ass Diamond Club seats that you got.
I miss you, Willie Moe.
I mean, or factoring in how much you would have to normally pay to sit there, do you have like a place that you default to when you decide to go to a game?
I'm going to use San Diego as an example because I have been there more than Seattle, and I have not sat a lot of places in Safeco. I've sat upper deck in front of the fireworks. I've sat Diamond Club. I've sat in the section, the loge section in the middle. Mm-hmm. I haven't been to the outfield. So in San Diego terms, I really do love lower outfield seats where you're pretty much on field level, but you're behind the fence. I think it's a fun perspective. You can see the whole field. But then that might be because like 90% of the time I was sitting out there, it's because I was behind Raul Ibanez and I got to watch him up close. And that guy is amazing. He scratches his ass like you wouldn't believe. It's fun to watch his dives. Anyway, this isn't about Raul. Raul, you're awesome. What I don't like, a lot depends on context. Sunday afternoons, I love matinees close to the field. Sitting in the view level has its upside, but I don't like it too much because it's just a hassle to get up there and the view sucks. But I don't like field level seats a whole lot either. I think the biggest factor if I'm going to enjoy a game is the game and the company.
Right.
I don't think where you sit really makes that much of a difference.
No, I would agree. It's just one of those, going to as many Safeco games as I have now, I've kind of developed some places that I tend to avoid, even though I usually eventually end up back there again. For example, the view, the 300 level right behind home plate in Safeco Field, it's a tremendous economic value. It's usually where the Boeing $10 tickets are. I don't know what they are now. Maybe they might be 12, but on BECU family nights, they're a really good deal. And they're generally places, they're sections that don't sell out that fast. And they give you the opportunity, generally, to, on short notice, get a seat that's right behind home plate and on the 300 level, so you have this just incredible top-down view of the field. Mm-hmm. So as far as watching fielders go and watching every aspect of the game, it's incredible. The problem is I would tend to always go to those games on Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what it's like in San Diego, but in Seattle, in family-friendly Seattle... Every home Sunday is Little League Kids night, or day. And where do they stick those Little League kids? You betcha, it's a 300 level right behind home plate. So there's nothing quite like the being surrounded by, I don't know, 500-600 Little League kids and their parents and coaches to really get me in a baseball mood.
Well, there was when we went to the game after the last summer's Years as Mariner Look at Landing event at Safeco. We all took up that session and we said enough things to make some families move away, but maybe you're talking about too big of a group where if it's 600 against one, it's probably the one is going to go.
Yeah. For that, we were also kind of more to the first base side, if I'm remembering the seats correctly.
That's true.
And it's a little bit more spread out there, especially because we were playing the Rays.
Yes. Ian Snell's first start.
Oh, right. And Doug Fister's major league debut.
Ian Snell's first boo at home.
He walked, what, 4 in the first inning of that game or something?
Like that. Oh, man, we were so optimistic. Okay, there's the topic for next podcast. We'll talk about Ian Snell.
Yes. Well, he deserves some talking.
Yeah.
So it's kind of sticking with just general questions, and this is relevant because 7 in a row, baby. If you had to pick Mariners World Series or Senator Stanley Cup?
All right, I need to think of a nice, delicate way to put this without pissing off all of our readers.
So we're going to post this on Silver 7, right? That's a lookout landing.
I'll be straight. I think I've never seen the Mariners in a World Series. Could be completely different. I've seen Ottawa in a Stanley Cup. I've seen the way I responded to their playoff run that year.
Their loss right in front of your eyes?
Yeah, and also to the good parts. The Ottawa gave me the sort of feeling that I guess Mariners fans must have had in 1995, but the Ottawa sustained it. The cool thing about the hockey playoffs is they go for 2 months if your team does well, and it sounds really drawn out and horrible unless your team is in it, and that is the most awesome thing. It's like 1/6 of a year is taken up with awesome. But just the way that I felt when Ottawa was in the Stanley Cup, I still watch highlights from their one win in that series pretty much every week. They're amazing. I think just the fact that I could experience that and then not go home and write about it is something that's just unbelievable to me. I would pay more money to see Ottawa win a Stanley Cup than the Mariners, if that's the measure.
I think that's kind of the key that I also agree with, which is weird because I'm a much, much newer hockey fan than you are. Mm-hmm. There's something about hockey to me is what baseball must be like to a lot of listeners out there, or just even me with baseball 10 years ago, mm-hmm. before I got analytical about it, before I delved into the writing about it, where it's an emotional release for me.
Mm-hmm.
And really, that's kind of what it's about when it comes down to sports. So mm-hmm. there is, you know, there's something to be said for just being able to lose yourself in the moment. Whereas with baseball, I know so much about it. And it's not even just the obligation to write about it, but just now how much I know about baseball that I'd be kind of losing the storyline, mm-hmm. so to speak, for the analysis, even as the games were going on, you know, relief pitchers coming in and would be analyzing in my head whether, well, what about this guy? Why not him? Is this, what's his ground ball rate? What's in hockey? First of all, for one thing, in hockey, you don't have time to do that. But mm-hmm. even beyond that, it's just kind of this, I don't know. I don't think I form really a cogent thought during a hockey game. It's just,
that's maybe the problem is based on so much downtime between plays that your brain starts to think ahead of yourself. But I know I agree with you. I mean, when people ask me about the difference between how I root for hockey and how I root for baseball, I say the same thing as you. Hockey is my emotional release. It's like, how do you get a break from watching sports? I watch another sport.
Right.
You know? Like, I can sit here and scream at my computer if I was doing something. I can't really do that. When Gutierrez hit that home run last year, that was probably the best I felt about a Mariners game in years. So I know there's still some of that emotion in there,
mm-hmm.
but so little takes you by surprise anymore. And when it does, you kind of see through the storyline. Like, first thing that comes to mind is that whole Felix turns it around after Wakamatsu gave him that lecture, you know? Wonderful story. 98% of people would believe it and say, oh yeah, Wakamatsu just straightened him up. Felix is mature now. If you look at the numbers, there's really not that much of a difference. It kind of, Felix is just good all year. And, you know, some bounces presented a storyline that I can't help but try to see through, and that kind of takes something away from it.
Yeah. It's that, I think, does go with that, the whole analysis angle is that the playoffs, especially in baseball, are so sample size prone that it's hard to really emotionally invest myself, even if it's just because I'm trying to protect myself because I know how much of a crapshoot it is. And obviously this is all theoretical because, hey, I haven't seen either the Senators or the Mariners in the playoffs in quite some time. So, or the Seahawks for that matter.
Yeah,
I'm sure there are people out there who can understand. You know, maybe somebody who watches the 2005 NFC Championship game religiously is—it's the same kind of, you know, response to a sport that's just much more pure emotion than we take baseball for now.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know if I would go so far as to say I would pay more money for a Stanley Cup Game 7 ticket than a World Series Game 7 ticket.
Mm-hmm.
Because of just how much baseball means to me as far as years invested. And that's where I differ from you, because I don't have as many years invested in hockey as you do. Mm-hmm. Whereas, and I don't know how you got started rooting in hockey, but for me, I got started rooting in hockey because of basically you and Graham and Nick and a couple mm-hmm. other people really reignited. Now, I rooted for hockey before, but never seriously. But baseball, there's a connection to Niehaus back in 1992, there's a connection to my father.
Mm-hmm.
So that hits home a lot more. And I think winning a World Series would probably bring up that well of emotion. But
yeah,
it's hard to anticipate that. It's something that would maybe, you know, just happen.
Yeah, the trouble is that it all is hypothetical because we haven't seen the Mariners in the playoffs since 2001. And when the Mariners were in the playoffs that year, we didn't know we weren't us.
Yeah,
you know?
we
were completely different people.
Yeah.
I saw Arthur Rhodes come in, and I was like, oh, shit. Of course, maybe that was the right thing to think. But, you know, I was a completely different fan then. So it is hypothetical. And maybe if the Mariners made it to playoffs, made the World Series, it would be just the same way it was with Ottawa. I don't know. Hopefully we find out this year. But what I will say is that if the Mariners win the World Series and I'm blogging, I hope people will understand if there's no post for a couple of days, because I'm either going to be drunk or in jail or both.
Well, that's where we can just rerun your... That's why you have the pre-written content. We'll just...
Hell yeah.
Bump that up. We'll just have a new post every 4 hours, and we'll just let people go Jeff crazy in it. Yeah, it would take weeks, I think, to be able to write anything that's not meaningful. Yeah. I don't know. maybe the euphoria would fade really quickly. I hope not, because that'd be so depressing. That would be
what happens. What happens if the Mariners win the World Series on a pop out to Rob Johnson? How do you feel about Rob Johnson the next day?
I honestly don't think I would care. I really don't think I would care. But that's kind of one of those things. I think about, you know, you win the Stanley Cup in Game 7, and because of the way that hockey is shaped, you know, everybody's going to be involved. Like, Alfredson would be primarily involved in the game, no matter what happened. Mm-hmm. The Mariners could win Game 7, and it could be on the back of an Ian Snell start. It's like, a Jose Lopez clutch double or something. It's, you know, not every game is going to be the 95 ALDS Game 5 or the 95 game against the Angels. It's not going to always be climactic in that sort of history-shaking sense. It could be very, you know, people that we've spent an entire season or two seasons or more building up this indifference toward. Mm-hmm. And that would just be, that'd be weird to me. I don't know. But whatever, that's probably enough on that.
You know what? That's probably enough overall, because I didn't realize we've been talking for almost an hour.
Yeah. See, I told you we can just ramble on.
All right. Yeah. Next week, one topic. We'll see where it goes. Pringles. Next week, we talk about Pringles and Ian Snow.
I haven't had Pringles in forever.
Okay. No, don't start. This is next week, Matthew.
All right. So this was I am totally blanking on the word. Experiment number two with podcasting. So
if any of you are still with us, feedback is great, and we'll try to figure out a conclusion after we figure out the intro.
Yes, and we'll get Jeff a better mic.
Yeah, thank you, Skype Default.
Yes.
$10, bitches.
We'll work it out. All right, so thanks to everybody who's stuck with us this far.